Good evening, and welcome to another Fireside Chat. This is your host, Zany Mystic. I have a delightful guest tonight, Liara from Operation Terra. I first discovered Operation Terra about 4 or 5 years ago and was captivated by the messages. I recall reading into the wee hours to finish them all. I had sent Liara an email at that time, as I had to several other Lightworker sites, and she's the only one who responded to me, and she sent a really nice, positive reply, and we communicated a few times at that time. Her forthright and warm reply matches the love that is inherent in her messages. Let's welcome her now. Greetings, Liara.
Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm fine.
Oh, that's good.
This is sort of a debut.
Yes. Well, it's always a debut for me, too. Each time, this is a new experience. I feel really lucky to have you here tonight because, for obvious reasons, I wasn't sure that you were going to be back, and we'll get into that in a little bit.
Well,
and I'm sure some of the listeners are going to be wondering, they're dying to know what happened, so we'll cover that.
Mm-hmm.
But for the listeners who don't know your messages and who aren't familiar with your story, I thought maybe we should go back to the beginning about, you know, what happened to awaken you and how did Operation Terra begin?
Well, you know, at this point in time, I can look back across many lifetimes and see threads that were being laid down in preparation for this lifetime that essentially were an acquisition of experiences and skills that prepared for this. And this is not unique to me. Eric Klein is a very wonderful and pure and high channel and he put Ascension on the world map back in 1990. And when I first met Eric, it was so obvious to me how many lifetimes had gone into, you know, preparing him to do his part in this with the purity that he brought through for that particular phase of things. So, but skipping over all those centuries, coming into present time, things really, as a very young child, I felt very at home with talking with God every day. God and me were buddies, and only at that point, I felt that God was, you know, like that picture in the Golden Bible stories, this bearded man on a cloud with little cherubs around. And but I felt very at home with God as my special friend, and I felt very loved and protected by God. And when I reached the fifth grade, I got introduced to science for the first time. And as I began peering into the order that I found in the universe through the eyes of science, it affirmed for me that there was, in fact, a creator. I find it interesting that so many people put religion and science at odds with each other, but it was science that revealed to me, it was like looking at the watch and knowing there had to have been a watchmaker.
Mm-hmm.
There was an implicit order everywhere I looked, from the leaves to the insects to the stars.
Wow.
And so something in me knew where I was going even at that very tender age. And I kind of bumped through a whole lot of different things, acquiring skills. On your website, people can read about some of the 3D things I did along the way.
Uh-huh.
And then everything changed on March 9th of 1981. A number of different synchronicities and intersections brought me to a place of reading the Bible. I had never read it. I had learned Bible stories. I had learned how to follow traditions of my family and my background. But then I got curious, and I read the Bible, and there was such a conflict between what I had been told in my upbringing and what I saw written there that I finally just asked about this being that I refer to as Christ. And I said, if you are there, would you please let me know in some way that you, I can know?
Uh-huh.
And this particular story is on my website in the article section. My website is www.operationterra.com, and you've got a link to it on your homepage, on your fireside chat page.
Right.
People can go there. But in the article section under my our story, I tell about how this came to me. And this was an amazing experience, and it was something I couldn't deny, and yet it put me at complete odds with all the beliefs and all the traditions that I had been raised with in terms of denying Christ, actually. And I felt I was called, and not a long time later, about a year later, he gave me a vision of the future. And it felt so immediate, and because this material comes in a holographic impress, it feels like I'm there. And it feels so immediate. At the time, I was working as a real estate and securities broker, and I was selling limited partnerships and IRA accounts.
Sure.
And I thought, how can I sell products to people for retirement when the world's going to end? And this was in 1982, and here we are 24 years later.
Yes.
And everything is arriving now. But at the time, I thought it was, you know, at most a year or two away.
Right.
And in the messages, the hosts generally don't give dates, and the two dates around shock and awe and 911 did come to pass. But there were other things where I felt, what happens when I receive this impress is I translate it into words. I don't get it so much. It comes in as a holographic impress,
mm-hmm.
a telepathic communication,
mm-hmm.
and then my brain translates it, and I feel it. I'm there, I feel it, I experience it, and I interpret it, and frankly, I misinterpreted some things.
Uh-huh.
But there's no question, I misinterpreted time.
Uh-huh.
Things don't look like I expect them to look by the time they show up, and they don't necessarily arrive when I think they will. And
uh-huh.
it's very hard for me to tell.
Uh-huh.
However, even full trance channels, Edgar Cayce is an example that most of your listeners might be familiar with.
Oh, yeah.
And
yes.
he was a full trance channel. Edgar Cayce wasn't there when his stuff came through.
Right.
And even his material is highly colored with his particular Christian orientation, his belief in Christian values and Bible and so
yes.
forth. And many, although his health readings were extremely accurate, and but they were also present time, his future prophecies, many of them didn't hold up. He predicted pole shift to have already occurred in 1999. And obviously, if it did, it's not on this timeline.
Right.
So even a great person like Edgar Cayce missed some calls.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any way around that.
Yeah, I agree.
And we're also dealing with a moving target.
Yep.
When you open the show, I'd like to jump right in and hit this one on the head, because I know I've gotten some emails, and people are saying, well, I thought you were going to be on the ships. What happened to that? I thought I was going to be on the ships.
Uh-huh.
I literally expected to disappear at the end of July.
Uh-huh.
I had an experience that I'm understanding as what I've dubbed a core transplant, and I later learned that my experience matched up very closely with something that Barbara Brennan describes in her Hands of Light work as this core thing in there. She calls it something else, but it's in the same location, and it's your essence. And I have been going through a very intense process on the inner, the purging of the cellular memory that is talked about in the messages, and all these lifetimes just being zeroed out. I have practically no short-term memory at all right now.
Wow.
And I'm living very much in 4D ways much of the time, and yet a lot of my 3D stuff is still getting flushed out.
Uh-huh.
I am having, and other people on my forums are reporting, experiences of, for lack of a better word, bilocation. That is, they're having a kind of meshing with their 4D persona, although they're still, frankly, like myself, walking around in these bodies in 3D. We're also having transient experiences of our 4D selves coming through, and time seems very, very peculiar to me right now. It's very rubbery. So a lot of the time I don't feel fully present here in 3D, and it's almost as if I'm experiencing through this body, but I'm not in it.
Uh-huh.
I
can sure relate to that one.
And a lot of people are reporting these same symptoms of memory loss, of sudden bursts of emotion coming out of the blue with no obvious triggers. My primary things that are clearing through me are fear and grief. Other people have other kinds of experiences. And then in between, I've been having something I can only call bliss attacks.
Wow.
You know, where all of a sudden, with no reason, I feel totally in bliss. And unlimited, and I don't know where that comes from either. So it's a very strange time. I have no doubt whatsoever there have been just too many proofs in my life scattered along the way. When back in 1987, I got awakened from a sound sleep to go out and stand in my backyard. This is on my website in the articles about my close encounters.
Uh-huh.
And there was this spaceship over the roof of my neighbor's house at the back of the lot where I was living.
Uh-huh.
Here it was in New Mexico, and the roofs are flat, most of them anyway. And this was a flat-roofed house, and here was a ship the size of this house, which had to have been over 50 feet in length.
Uh-huh.
5 feet off the roof, and there it was. It was just completely visible. It just blinked on, and there it was, and I saw it clearly, and then it blinked off again. People who may have followed the Star Trek Next Generation series when it was playing or in reruns or whatever, when these ships are cloaked, and they can drop their cloaking, or they can stay cloaked.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about a lot of those kinds of experiences in that Close Encounters article. But it's very much, you know, one of the experiences I had was very much like one of those Klingon ships uncloaking. It was transparent, it was greenish, and as it was just like turning up a rheostat, and when I saw it clearly, they went the other way. And this thing was at least 2.5 miles long.
Wow.
It was cylinder shaped, and I was up high enough in one of the lower mountains near Santa Fe that it was actually below me, and it was hanging right over the city there.
Wow.
And nobody could see it.
Wow. Wow.
many experiences. So I know the ships are here.
Mm-hmm.
I know the ships are real. And back in 87, that was a very juicy summer for me. I had a lot of experiences, a lot of very intensive training.
Mm-hmm.
And I was asked on the day of Harmonic Convergence in August, I was asked to send my mind up onto the ship that I was, you know, being communicated from.
Uh-huh.
And it was alive. It was alive. And I discovered that the way they talk about fuel efficiency, they do a mind meld with the ship, and everything just teleports.
Wow. Wow.
No, nothing other than mental energy involved at all.
That's awesome.
So it blinks off in one location, blinks on in another, and it's instant.
Wow.
Or almost instant.
That's amazing.
It's been an amazing journey. And then I expected, in this original vision in 1982,
mm-hmm.
I was told at the end of it, and the vision is on the website in the article section also. It's called the 1982 vision. And at the end of it, I was told, I was sent back from this experience back into my life, and I was told I would be called.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that I had been called in 1999 when the host asked me to begin delivering this set of messages.
Uh-huh.
But the call really didn't come. It's almost like everything was preparation.
Huh.
The call really came just a couple months ago.
Really?
Yeah, when I was sent to where I am now. And I felt being called. And
wow.
That was the first time it felt like something was calling to me. And so I'm in position now and still unpacking and getting settled in. But I am feeling that by September, things are going to kick into high gear. That's just my feeling. Nobody's told me anything. Don't blame the host if that isn't accurate. It's just a sense I have, an intuitive feeling, a body sense. Yeah. So that kind of brings me up to, well, I should add one other thing, which was when I got asked to put these messages out, I put up a website on one of those free sites, and I didn't know, you know, I have never promoted this. And I didn't even know if anybody even wanted to know any of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But then I started to get emails. And at the end of 6 months, I had 30 people on a mailing list. And it went very slowly at first.
Uh-huh.
And when the message, the coming storm came in, it was sort of that 100th monkey thing.
Uh-huh.
And I felt it as that message was coming in. I could feel the energy that it was gathering, and wow, it just suddenly went from about 60 people to 300 in 2 weeks.
Huh.
It was right around 98. So there was that 100th monkey thing.
Uh-huh.
It had been at 98, and then it went to 300 in 2 weeks.
Wow.
And then it kind of pooped along, and then at the peak last year, I had about 3,800 people on the list.
Jeez.
And then I thought I was going to disappear, and I shut down everything.
Uh-huh.
And I went through almost like a cocoon process. And a lot of us have. I had shut the forums, and now they're open again. And we went through this kind of collective process. There were about 90 individuals on the forums there through that, and that have, you know, went through the whole thing. And we have really been a community experience, and we've all contributed support to one another, and we've really come out in a very different place. Even though I look the same and I'm still here in 3D, inside is very, very different.
Uh-huh. Do you feel like this, that you're kind of like a precursor to what's happening with all of us?
Well, I honestly
don't know.
I don't know, except that I have been told and shown over and over I'm sort of a path cutter. They have used the image of an icebreaker boat that breaks through a channel in the ice so that the other boats can follow.
Yes.
And it's kind of hard being the one that's out there in the bush whacking away so others can follow.
I know.
And especially since I haven't a clue, except in the moment, what to expect or where it's going to go to. If I've only learned one thing, and I haven't just learned one thing, I've learned many, but
right. If
one thing I have learned is that I get the information way ahead of time.
Uh-huh.
And it never looks like I think it will look by the time it shows up.
Yeah.
And then I can look back and say, oh, so that's what they were talking about. But at the time I receive it, I haven't gone through the process, and I interpret it from where I am when I receive it, and then things change.
Uh-huh.
And so...
Well, nonetheless, I mean, I have to commend you on doing an incredible job at being a clear channel. Because when I first read those messages, I'm telling you, I could not stop reading them. I felt for the first time that I was connected to something that was accurate. And I have never faltered from that belief, and I feel that way today. Those messages are as timely today as they were then, and I consider you and the messages a beacon of light.
Well, I appreciate that. I know some people... They don't feel what's going on underneath the words and underneath the surface.
Mm-hmm.
And when a particular date comes and goes, they say, well, they throw the whole thing out. But the value of the messages is something other than that.
Oh, absolutely.
The words that the hosts have said, the words are just a carrier wave.
Absolutely.
And there's a communication going on. I've heard it from so many people that they've read the messages over and over, and every time.
Yes.
It's like reading them for the first time, and they see something that they didn't see or hear something.
Yep.
They didn't hear.
Yep.
This is a true transmission.
Yes, it is.
And
I totally, agreeing with you on that one.
But it's not for everyone.
No.
Not everyone can receive what is being given.
No.
And it's perfect because they've got something else that's there.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the wonderful thing is that, you know, if your messages don't particularly resonate for a particular person, there's something else that will.
Exactly.
You know, and that's what we need to find for ourselves is those messages that resonate within us. And not try to make all of the messages or all light worker information try to fit into one box because it just can't.
No, because a lot of it actually goes in very opposite directions.
Yes, yes.
And that doesn't mean it's evil or bad or misleading or anything. It's for a different audience, for a different destination.
Exactly.
The model I work with says there's going to be multiple futures coming out of this one shared reality.
Mm-hmm.
And so when I come across information that says, for example, there aren't going to be any earth changes, that doesn't fit with the evidence that I see going on around me in the world, but I can allow that perhaps that particular body of information is for a timeline on which the earth changes don't occur.
Exactly. Exactly. Just as there may be timelines for those people who will be experiencing things such as Lori Toy speaks about with the whole continent splitting in two and this and that and the other thing. It's a different reality.
It is. It's another... There's one thing in print that I'm aware of that kind of addresses this multiplicity.
Uh-huh.
And that is Mass Dreams of the Future, which was a compilation of data gathered by three different researchers.
Uh-huh.
Helen Wambach has passed on, but she originated the idea, and then Chet Snow was working with her and eventually took over the job of collating everything.
Uh-huh.
And Leo Sprinkle, who's a person, he was a professor at the University of Wyoming in Laramie, and he, every summer, would work with people who had missing time. He did a lot of regression hypnosis.
Uh-huh.
The three of them collaborated and used hypnosis to progress people instead of regressing them. They took them forward in time and very quickly determined they didn't want to deal with the immediate future because it was just too traumatic for people to go through it. So they took them out 150 years and 300 years
Wow.
into the future.
Wow.
And they asked them a standard series of questions.
Uh-huh.
There were people that they sampled from all over the United States, and then Chet took some data in France just to make sort of cross-cultural samples out of it.
Uh-huh.
And it was interesting. They came up depending on how they slice the pie, most of the people were not in bodies, even 300 years out.
Wow.
And they discovered in their data, there were probably, I count six different futures. There's one that they kind of split into A and B. So there are six different future worlds. And it was very, very clear that they were mutually exclusive from one another.
Uh-huh.
For example, there was one world where the planetary civilization was sort of like a pre-industrial civilization, sort of like the Amish culture.
Okay.
It was very agrarian and...
Technical.
No technical at all. No telephones, no electricity, using animals to plow and all those things. There was another future existing at the same time where people were living totally below ground and underground cities and could not walk around on the surface of the planet without something like a spacesuit. In fact, one man, in recalling this future of his, he died because he got a puncture in his suit, and he died from the air that came into his suit.
Wow.
And clearly these were not the same Earths.
Yeah.
Because they were mutually exclusive environments.
Uh-huh.
One,
uh-huh.
People were walking around on the surface, no tech. Another one, people living below the surface, unable to breathe the air. So they were clearly different Earths. And there were other ones. There was one that was sort of a high-tech, high-touch sort of progression of the New Age phenomenon that we have now, where there were spaceships flying around, but there was also a very spiritual orientation.
Mm-hmm.
And each of these worlds that Chet Snow analyzed and collated from this data were different worlds and different futures. There was a rubble civilization.
Mm-hmm.
And so there were all these different worlds, and Terra was not in there. So I don't know how many. I've been thinking that there are 12 different future Earths coming out of this one, and that somehow the 12 gates of the New Jerusalem refer to the 12 exit points. There's another man that has a site, NHNE, New Heaven, New Earth, I don't know if it's .org or .com, that had a vision experience. He's a Native American background, and he had a vision experience of 12 paths. And then I think each of those is sort of like the seed of a new fractal that spins off all these new parallels.
Mm-hmm.
In the messages, there's a lot of talk about fractals and holograms and these kind of parallel realities, and how all of this is created in a single instant, and all the choices are explored in the one instant of creation. And that's when the movie is made, and then we just live it.
Wow.
We just experience it as it plays within linear time.
Wow.
So at least that's what I've concluded so far, subject to change with new information.
My goodness. Well, you're blowing all my questions out of the water now.
No, it's all right.
You're taking my mind on some really interesting journeys here.
Well, I don't know how the line goes from Shakespeare. It's something about there's more than you can imagine in this universe or something. It's one of Shakespeare's lines. I don't remember how it goes, but it's something about there's more to reality than you can imagine.
A lot of psychics claim that they can't see past 2012.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if you feel that is a trigger date. Is that when everything is supposed to theoretically get reset? I know there's a lot of different cycles coming to an end, and it seems like certainly we are in agreement that this particular Earth can't continue going on as it's going.
No, and we passed the ecological window, decades ago.
Yes,
we are not self-supporting anymore. I mean, we're just consuming resources and going down the ecological toilet. So we're. If there is anything left, it's not going to be very pretty.
Right.
The 2000, well, it's kind of interesting because there isn't even agreement on that.
Yes, you're right.
The estimates that cluster around that are 2011 through 2013.
Mm-hmm.
The body of work that most attracted my, these are various interpretations of the Mayan calendar and other things, but there again, which timeline are we talking about?
I
honestly don't know. If that's true, if 2012 is it, you know, we've got another 5 years.
I know.
but they're going to be pretty intense.
I'm
not really sure about dates. It seems, at least from my experience right now, that it's a lot shorter than that.
You had a speaker
on May 26th, Jean-Claude, that said something very similar,
mm-hmm.
that his feeling was that we didn't have that much time.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if, in fact, these different timelines have different times of exit.
Yes.
The messages would seem to indicate that.
Yes.
So who knows? I really don't know, but my feeling that one of the things that interested me, there was a man, I'm having a short-term memory lapse here.
That's okay.
He did time wave zero, and he did mushrooms, actually, psilocybin, and in this mushroom exploration, Terrence McKenna.
Oh, yes, of course.
I don't know exactly how he came to this place, but somehow using the I Ching as a place of entry, he came up with a computer program called Time Wave Zero. And what would happen is, and he developed a concept that I hadn't come across called novelty. And so, for example, what we call the Dark Ages would be a time of very little novelty, and the time that we call the Renaissance would be a time of great novelty.
Okay.
So there are times when it's sort of like a wave, like an oscillation between very little invention and a great deal of new things coming forth, and he called that novelty, when things are new things are coming forth. And it didn't matter what particular date he plugged into the system, it would oscillate up and down, and it would come to rest on this December 21st, 2012 date, the time of zero novelty. In the messages from the host, they talk about a cycle of creation that is 4.5 billion years long. In the Hindu tradition, from the Vedic scriptures, there is a notion of yugas and of a day of Brahma. A day of Brahma is the Hindu name for the creator of the universe. Then there's Vishnu, who is the preserver, and Shiva, who is the destroyer. And this is a cycle: creation, preservation, destruction, followed by a new creation. A day of Brahma in that system of cycles is 4.5 billion years long. But according to the host, when you get to the end of one of those cycles, you go into what would be called the night of Brahma, in which no thing exists. There is no time. And so a night of Brahma does not equal 4.5 billion years of nothingness. It just is an instant. And then there's a mega refresh, there's another big bang, there's another creation, and all these new potentials are suddenly shot forth from the mind of the creator, and an entirely new creation exists.
Wow.
And in the Keys of Enoch, which I think Jean-Claude referred to that in his talk, J.J. Hertak used a term of the respatialization of consciousness. And that really fits with my sense of, it's like I'm standing here one moment, and the next moment my consciousness is someplace else in this refresh. Right now, you and I aren't here half the time. read Michael Talbot's Holographic Universe, and you can get a better feel of that. We're blinking on and off many, many, many times a second.
Mm-hmm.
We're only
mm-hmm.
here half the time.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And I don't know where we are when we're not here, but we're only here half the time.
Yes.
And my understanding is that, and it's just like hitting the refresh button on your computer monitor, it redraws the picture. So what we're about to traverse is a redrawing of the creation.
Wow.
But it'll just, we won't experience the discontinuity.
Mm-hmm.
We'll blink off in one place and blink on in another. And I don't know, of course, what that'll be like or what it'll feel like or look like, but we are ending one of these huge cycles, 4.5 billion years.
Yes.
And Terence McKenna's data suggests that we are approaching a time of zero novelty. And there is a tremendous fine-tuning of things going on, but no real breakthroughs.
Yes.
You think back, Salk vaccine in medicine, Leonard Bernstein as a composer.
Mm-hmm.
Those were all things of the 60s.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
And now we have fragments creating, but there's no mega, large explosions on there's nothing new. We're revisiting every period in history.
Mm-hmm.
I can look at current events and trends and see the fall of Rome, the rise of Nazi Germany,
mm-hmm.
the 60s, the
yes.
peace movement of the 60s.
Yep.
It's very in for the fiesta dinnerware, which was a thing of the 20s. I mean, it's everywhere I look, I see echoes of patterns that we have already traversed.
Yes, yes.
And there seems to be some sort of barrier or threshold out there in time that we are coming very close to. The other thing is the idea of karma that is so popular. What goes around comes around much faster now.
Oh, yes.
Much
yes.
faster. It hits that thing and, boom, it's right back in your face. So it's a very exciting time to be in a body. I don't think there are any fixed answers, and anybody that thinks they have fixed answers is probably going to be surprised.
Oh, yes, yes. Well, that always seems to happen to me when, as the second I think I know something, I'm, you know, it's like tying your shoelace to the ground, you know, you fall on your face. But the one thing that the hosts do talk about that I'm curious, there's a couple things. The interlopers, for instance,
mm-hmm.
it feels like, and many of us have done a lot of research on various conspiracy theories and, you know, who's really pulling the strings, the Bilderbergs, the Illuminati, the Dracos, reptilians, and so on and so forth. Does this seem like a metaphoric play of the light and dark redrawing?
Well, I think it goes back to, you know what MO means, modus operandi.
Mm-hmm, yes.
Okay. We have different ways of doing things, and all of us are a mixture. I don't think anybody is purely service to others or service to self.
Uh-huh.
Even service to self individuals here on this planet have some mixture of service to others. They at least care about their own,
right,
and take care
right.
of their own.
Right.
There are higher Ds, higher density beings, who have both incarnated on the planet, and I think you're probably one, and I think I'm one, and a lot of other people who may be listening are higher D beings that are currently walking around in 3D bodies.
Mm-hmm.
And I've met them in both flavors. I've met them in, there was a woman that looked just like a human being who was a praying mantis.
Wow.
And it was a very odd experience to meet her, but it
yeah.
was very instructive.
Uh-huh.
She looked like a human being, and she would never look me in the eye. And I was sitting and talking with her one day, and this membrane slid back, and there was this other being inside
wow.
that was looking at me.
Ugh.
It was very, very odd.
Yeah.
And she had a particular collection of behaviors and patterns and what she was drawn to.
Uh-huh.
I do believe that many of the things we are witnessing here are being orchestrated and choreographed from negative polarity, higher density beings.
Okay. Yeah.
The Bilderbergers, I saw a very interesting videotape back when I used to have television.
Uh-huh.
There was a guy in England that actually took a video camera, and quite brave of him, he went and asked for and got an interview with the head of the Bilderberger Association. And as I have that tape, I kept the tape, and as I listened to this interview, I came to the conclusion that the Bilderbergers are not evil, in quotes, as much as they are opportunists.
Yes, yes.
And what they are is a good old boy club, although they include people like Sheila Graham. You know, what it takes to be in that club, it's a private club of networking.
Hmm.
And if one has proven oneself to be successful in the jungles of commerce, they are invited in to network with other people who have similarly succeeded.
Uh-huh.
And they exchange, they help each other. And that isn't any different than a light working network where people pool resources and help each other, or a church group that you know networks with each other to help each other.
The only caveat to that would be, as long as it doesn't disturb the rights or the lives of other people. And
well, I use the word opportunist.
Okay.
And that there is a certain predatory quality there.
Yes.
And that is an STS trait.
Mm-hmm.
Predation is an STS trait.
Mm-hmm.
Deception is an STS trait.
Mm-hmm.
And there are a lot of people. There was a wonderful group, the Extraterrestrial Earth Mission, the third team in particular, where I resonated with. And they talk about one of their newsletters from back then, the Shadow Masters, which is light. It's dark masquerading as light.
Uh-huh.
And what it's for is to test your discernment, to help you develop discernment. And every time you develop discernment at a certain level, you're asked to go to a higher level.
Mm-hmm.
So the next presentation of this opportunity requires a more subtle discernment. There are a lot of people who are deceptive. There are people who have what I like to euphemistically call occupants.
Yeah.
And they aren't nice guys, and
uh-huh.
they're being used. But I think, rather than judge that we the picture, again, the model I work with, there's a couple aspects. One is that we didn't create ourselves. Our oversoul created us. We are projections of our oversoul. The oversoul is the holographic camera, and we are the image that it projects.
Okay,
like in Star Wars, the first one, R2-D2 projects out Princess Leia, and she
says,
take me to Obi-Wan Kenobi.
Yes.
So R2-D2 was projecting the holographic image, and Princess Leia was the image and the animation that the animated hologram that he projected. We're like that, according to the holographic universe, that we are these holographic projections. And the oversoul is the projector that is creating this projection into this reality, and all these projections interact.
Mm.
The other aspect that ties in with the model I work with, and this is an image I use in one of the early messages on the site, is that of a disco ball.
Oh.
And I like this because what it says is that, you know, on a disco ball, there's all these little tiny mirrors,
right.
And they reflect the light, and as the ball turns, they reflect the light at a slightly different angle. Well, I think that's what we are. I think each one of us reflects the Creator at a slightly different angle,
mm-hmm.
and it's 360 degrees around and in all directions. So each mirror on one side has its exact opposite on the other side.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I really, and as Jean-Claude said so eloquently, there really isn't anything outside of God.
Uh-huh.
There's nothing that exists or can exist outside of the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
And that the OT messages say the same thing. And to the Creator, all of its creations are good and serve a purpose, which is to provide experience for the Creator. So the Creator is experiencing through you, through my cat, through the water in my glass, through the telephone, and through the experiences that people receive from everyone else. So there's this interactive universe. Every quark, a quark is the building block of matter and our current understanding. Every quark is fully conscious and aware of every other quark of the universe. They communicate, they interact, and everything in the interaction is changed by the interaction. So it's a completely reciprocal and reflexive universe. You and I are teaching and learning from each other at the same time. And it's true of even things that we don't like. Jean-Claude talked about no preferences. And Mother, who was Aurobindo's helpmate and carried on his work after he died, wrote a book called The Mind of the Cells. And when she accessed the compartment where Aurobindo was, the mind, where a full God consciousness, there are no preferences. That's very hard for a 3D human personality to grasp.
Yeah.
Because I've been homeless a couple times. And I much prefer a hot shower, a warm, dry bed, and, you know, not to sleeping in the rain.
Yes.
I definitely have a preference there.
Yes.
But to a master, everything is experienced as perfect, and there really are no preferences. Nothing is better than or worse than. It just is.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that concept of isness that is the nature of the Creator.
Mm-hmm.
It is. The Creator is, and the creation is. It is what it is.
Mm-hmm.
And when one can really live from that place of acceptance, there is a freedom. I fall in and out of it all the time. I don't successfully attain that all the time. But it is becoming more and more my way of operating my life.
You're just an amazing person. I'm fascinated. We've conversed, you know, online quite a bit, and I'm just blown away by, you know, some of the things that you say. But, you know, live, you're even better.
Well, thank you. We can
you're
do this
amazing.
Again if you want.
I wanted to ask a little bit about since you have seen ships, and you are definitely one who's been contacted, apparently, some channels say that the Earth is in a bottleneck of density right now, and that we have help from many, 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 many star nations.
Yes.
Because the bottleneck is holding other universes or other civilizations up from ascending as well. Does that resonate for you at all, or?
I don't hold that picture. I do. It is my understanding that there's a frequency barrier around the planet, a kind of a quarantine. And David Icke wrote about that in his very earliest works. He got that idea in part from Barbara Marciniak.
Yes.
And it is also in the material that was channeled by Carla Ruckert. The raw material talks about the frequency barrier. In the message shattering glass of the Operation Terra messages, it talks about us operating collectively, sounding frequency patterns, resonating them out to break through or shatter the glass ceiling. You know, there's that expression of the glass ceiling in corporate world. You can only rise so far in that. There's a fellow, Stuart Wild, I think his name is, that wrote about how you get stuck in coming back and coming back and coming back.
Yeah.
It's very complex. There are actually some negative ETs that bond with people and work through people here in 3D. And as a person exits 3D through the portal we call death, they take their soul memories, and the person has to come back to get the experience again. And so there's lots of different ways of keeping people locked in. But what I really think is that all of this was written. There's a wonderful thing in the Bible about, in Revelation, about even those who were written in the Book of Life before the foundation of the world. So it implies that all of this was created even before the world was manifest. It was already written. And the idea of the Oversoul, there's a kind of a script happening, and each of us is going to end up in our right place, and nobody can keep us from getting there.
Oh, good.
I really believe that, and those of us who are here to break that frequency barrier, break through and create an energetic pathway out of here, mm-hmm. to another place or another level, we'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing can stop us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
If we've had interference, it's all part of this mixture, this dance, this lila, this illusion.
Sure.
We're all in a trance because we focus on these external things, but the real drama is going on in a place that we can't directly access with our physical senses.
Mm-hmm.
It really is happening, but it's not visible. Solara, who did the 1111 thing, she calls her site the invisible, invisible.
Mm-hmm.
It really is taking place unseen. And I had a second vision that's on my website in the articles section that I was shown this, that behind the world of the apparent that's accessible by the senses, there's this other foundational world, which is where it's really going,
yes.
going on.
That
it's
sourcing from. It's a relationship of consciousness manifesting through the physical. And there's another thing that I noticed on your site that was interesting that ties into everything I've been researching. You had a picture of the time loop and mentioned that Robert Shapiro speaks about that.
Yes.
And I found that really resonated with me. Is his work also, do you find that validating? And what can you say
about
it?
Well, it's kind of interesting. I studied under Robert.
He
taught me how to voice channel, and I learned to voice channel in his classes. I also had the experience of seeing my very first spaceship in his classes. There were 10 of us.
Wow.
And I had the last class I did with him, we learned to materialize an object out of the air. I've never been able to do it since then, but I was able to do it in that class.
Wow.
And Robert and I stayed in touch for a while, and then he went his way, and I went my way. And I honestly haven't read his books, so I don't know what they say. He's just the most warm and wonderful person. He was the most gentle teacher. He reminds me of Yoda. He just had that quality that Yoda has of just this wonderfully warm and gentle teacher. And it was a very safe place for me to open up. But I never have read his writings.
Wow. Well, they're pretty.
And
pretty
the time loop thing was supplied by someone on my forums, gave me a copy of that diagram, and it so fit with what I was being told that I put it up on the site, because apparently when I exit the time, I used to think the time loop meant I went up into 4D and came back here, but I realized. Some things manifested in last December that showed me it was the other way around. I've been on 4D all along, and I've exited and gone into 3D on this big loop, and now I'm about to return to where I've been standing all along.
Uh-huh. It's really hard to talk about these things because...
Narnia. Did you see the Chronicles of Narnia?
Yeah.
Lucy went through a time loop. The first one was only a few hours long.
Hello?
Does that mean we'll be cut off? Okay.
Oh, we are okay. All right, well, let me wrap this up.
Books.
Well, I thought we had more time. I could talk to you for hours.
Well, we can do it again.
Good. Oh, wonderful. Is there anything you'd like to leave us with before we sign off?
Just I invite everyone to go to the site and feel into it for themselves. And the material is free at no charge to anyone. It is available in book form, and you can buy it through the site, which is an Amazon link, or through Amazon or through a bookstore. And Godspeed.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Liara. And I look forward to seeing you or hearing or talking with you again. You've been wonderful.
Well, thanks.
Okay. Welcome back.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a Service to Others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning into our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.